Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Stephanie L. and I am a recovered compulsive overeater from Southern California. Today is Tuesday, July 4th, 2023, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we are on page 91. We're going to read the second full paragraph, beginning with "When your man is better," and ending with "He may be more receptive when depressed." We are reading and commenting on one paragraph only this morning. Today's readers are Deb E., reading the text, Dana P., reading page 164, and Eileen M. is our backup reader today. Our newcomer greeter is Seema M., and announcements will be Robin P. The reference number for yesterday, Monday, July 3rd, 2023, is 20,407-20407. And today, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, is 20,409 or 20409. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. I will now ask Tanya P. to please read the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous.
Thank you, Stephanie. This is Tanya P., recovering by God's grace and mercy in Michigan's Upper Peninsula. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood God. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood God, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Thank you for your service, and thank you for allowing me to serve. I pass.
Thank you so much, Tanya P. And next, I will ask Liz A. to read the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous.
Good morning. This is Liz A., gratefully recovered compulsive overeater from Southern California. And these are the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for letting me be of service, and I pass.
Oh, thank you so much, Lizzie. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, and then we stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and the literature that we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, please press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, and then press star 1 to remute your phone. To have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we are on page 91. We're going to read the second full paragraph that begins with, "When your man is better," ending with, "He may be more receptive when depressed." We are reading and commenting on one paragraph today. I will now ask Deb E. to get us started.
Hi, thank you. This is Deb E., recovered compulsive overeater in Israel. Okay, when your man is better, the doctor might suggest a visit from you. Though you have talked with the family, leave them out of the first discussion. Under these conditions, your prospect will see he is under no pressure. He will feel he can deal with you without being nagged by his family. Call on him while he is still jittery. He may be more receptive when depressed. So the first thing that stood out to me was kind of a bit of a contrast that there is between the first sentence and the last sentence. When your man is better, I think back to when I was in the food fog. Like no one could reach me. I was somewhere else. No one could convince me that anything I was doing was wrong. I was completely wrapped up in ego and self. Of course, I didn't see it at the time. It's only in retrospect that I can understand these things. And so much of it was the behaviors, not even that much. You know, there was obviously the food also, but just the character defects that were so strong, the self-righteousness. My ego was just like, completely in charge. And no one could have reached me then. No one could have told me, you know, like, listen, I think there's a problem. I think you need some help. Let me know, we have this program that might help you. I don't think I would have listened to any of that. And then the last sentence, he may be more receptive than when depressed. I feel like there's this fine balance. There's like this little, like, not balance, sorry, this fine line between the two. Like, I couldn't be completely in the food to hear the message, but I couldn't be feeling really good either. I had to be feeling just bad enough. I had to have the memory of the last binge just fresh enough in my memory to be willing to listen to the message of recovery and find some little bit of willingness to change, to want to change, because I forget things so easily. And so anytime, you know, I would just completely forget how awful I felt in the food, after the food. And, you know, especially like if my weight was where I wanted it to be and my body looked the way I wanted it to, I felt like, oh, I was cured. There was no problem, you know? So the only moment where this message could get through to me was somewhere in between those two. And then talked with the family, that line, you know, I actually sought help from a family member when I realized that I was, you know, something was really wrong with the way I was eating and the way I viewed my body and food and everything. But if someone would have come to me, if my family, as a family member would have told me, like, you know, this person has this program and it can really help and they've recovered and I think you should hear their story, I know my ego would have just taken over and said, like, I don't want to hear it. Don't talk to me. What problem? What, you think I have a problem? Like, I would have just been completely defensive, I think. And so it's really tricky. Like, I feel like for me, my own experience, I had to come forward. Like, I had to recognize it was a problem and I had to want to get better and seek help. And so,
gentle reminder.
Sometimes it's, oh, thank you. I'll wrap up. It's, you know, just someone maybe being there just at the right moment. And then sometimes it's the person just has to find her program. And that's a big reason why, you know, I continue to come to meetings, I continue to share so that it is around for people who still need to join. Thank you. I pass.
Well, thank you so much, Debbie. We are now going to open up the meeting for sharing. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So if you shared on Sunday or Monday on any vision meeting, please allow others the opportunity to share today. And I'm going to get a lineup going here. If you can please give your first name, your last initial, and where you are calling from. So who would like to share on this paragraph?
Eileen M.
All right, Dr. Eileen M.
Ian F.
Hey, Ian, gotcha.
Wendy B.
Okay, Wendy B.
Laura L.
Laura L.
Pam C.
Pam C. And do we have anyone else who would like to get in on this first round? Wow, you guys are going easy on me today. I've got Eileen M., Ian F., Wendy B., Laura L., Pam C., and if you could please let us know where you're calling from, that would be awesome. And we'll go ahead and get started with Eileen M., followed by Ian F.
Good morning. I am Eileen M., a recovered compulsive overeater. I'm in New Hampshire. And, you know, I really like that distinction between the first sentence and the last sentence. You know, being better as opposed to being depressed and jittery. And it reminds me of what we were reading last week at this time. We were reading about, you know, wait until he goes on a spree and then approach him. And, you know, because then he's more likely to be open-minded. This makes me think back to, you know, when I used to binge, I would, you know, after I'd go through the binge, I'd have this horrible remorse, and then I'd get a few days abstinent. And then I would think, oh, I'm better. I'm really not that bad. So, you know, I really didn't have an open mind. I really wasn't ready to hear new ideas. I think at that point, you know, I wasn't out of ideas because I wasn't, you know, ready to hear something new. I didn't have that open mind. You know, and there's really like a kind of humility involved, you know, at that point when you're entirely desperate and ready, that there's this humility of like, hey, I don't have all the answers. Maybe, you know, someone can help me. And, you know, it's really that I have to find someone in whom the problem's been, you know, solved. I mean, that's the person to best approach me because then I'm really ready to listen. At least that's how it was for me. You know, I got to this point where I was ready to listen to anything. And, you know, and I was able, you know, to get abstinent enough days so that I could hear what the sponsor was telling me. You know, I could hear that there was a solution. I really had to be, you know, as the book says, beaten into a state of reasonableness, you know, before I was ready to, you know, take action to really change the situation. I really liked how that comparison between those sentences was made at the beginning. So anyway, thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much, Eileen M. from New Hampshire. Next up, Ian F., followed by Wendy B.
Hi, I'm Ian F., compulsive overeater. Very grateful to be here. I think it's interesting that this paragraph says the doctor might suggest a visit from you. The man being better, I interpret the man being better as being alcohol is now not in his system. And my experience with this disease has been, and also when I hear people who are addicted to other things, be it alcohol or drugs, or sugar, whatever it is, it's that when the thing is out of your body, that's when you get the most depressed. That's when you get the most lonely, and that's when you feel the most out of whack. It's like so much of, addiction is wanting and wanting and wanting and never being satisfied, you know? And I know personally, as has been shared, like, if I feel like I still can get some satisfaction out of this, I'm not ready. And if someone is like, yeah, I still feel like I could eat pizza and you know, I could do that in moderation. I've been told that, and I always tell them, go eat more pizza. Because either you're not a compulsive overeater and you don't have to do this, or you're not in a place where you're receptive enough. Because when I crawled in the second time, like, I was like, I want to stop doing these things. They're not in my system. And I want to stop, but I can't. Like, I have this huge urge, and it's totally against my will, and I don't know what to do. Like, that's something that no one wants to be like, oh, you're crawling in, and you feel completely hopeless? Great. But that's kind of what it's like. Call on him when he's still jittery, when he's in that place of, this thing is entirely out of my body, and I can feel what addiction is, which is that there's nothing wrong with me, but I feel a need to fill the hole that's not there. That's when I'm receptive. That's all I've got. I'll pass.
Oh, thank you so much, Ian. And where are you calling from?
Sorry about that. I'm from Kentucky.
From Kentucky. Okay, thank you so much. All right, next up we're going to have Wendy B. followed by Laura L.
Good morning, Wendy, this is Wendy B.
There you are.
I'm here. Sorry. I was unmuting. This is Wendy B. recovered in Arizona. And where it says, you know, under no pressure without being nagged by his family. And I'm kind of relating to this as being, you know, part of a nagging family member, you know. And this just reminds me of the damage I can do when I nag, you know, and try to pressure someone who's deep into their addictive behavior and they have no desire to stop. You know, they're so busy resisting my blame and accusations that they aren't looking at the problems that their disease is causing them. You know, and I become the target and they blame me for their discomfort instead of the disease. And then when it says he may be more receptive, I like that, you know, admonition to look for receptivity, you know, like was said earlier, an open mind, humility, and ready to listen. And this is about getting to the place of willingness, you know, and the desire to change. You know, it's not about, you know, that I want someone to change. I want someone to get better, you know, what I need from them. You know, this is about matching their desire, you know, with the helpful information given in this program. And thank you for letting me share.
Well, thank you so much, Wendy B. Next up is Laura L., followed by Pam C.
Hi, good morning. This is Laura L. I am calling in from Arkansas. I'm a compulsive overeater, gratefully recovered, not cured. I love this paragraph, and it takes me back. I would have never listened. I did not listen to any of my family members or friends who were ever concerned about me and concerned about my weight and what I was doing to myself. I would have never listened to them. The only thing that ever got through to me was this program, my fellows, and my sponsor. But I did have to be in that space in between where I was no longer in the food fog. I discovered the program after my husband died. I think I had to be that down and that depressed emotionally before I even was willing to consider the fact that I was a compulsive overeater. Like, I absolutely would never have thought of it until, you know, my husband was taken from me way too early. And that's really 7 years ago when I started on this journey and 6 years ago when I came into the OA program. I had been in a food fog for probably over 20 years. And had no idea what I was doing to myself. And there were several people in my family throughout all those years who tried to tell me that what I was doing was destroying my body. And I absolutely was never going to listen to that. I did not care. I just thought they were trying to be controlling or things. I made all kinds of excuses. And I think that's why it talks about in this paragraph being nagged by their family. I just felt like they were nagging. All of those old arguments and fights and bitter disputes that you may have, like I had with my family members, those rise up when someone, even when with good intentions, is trying to tell me that I'm harming myself. All the bitterness of something that happened a year ago that I'm still mad about rises up and I'm not willing to listen. So I'm so very grateful for my higher power and this program and especially my fellows and my sponsors that I've had that I was finally able to listen in God's time. So thanks for letting me share and I pass.
Thank you so much, Laura L. from Arkansas. And next up, we're going to take Pam C., and then we're going to take another lineup. Pam, you're up.
Good morning, everyone. This is Pam C. I'm a recovering compulsive overeater in New Jersey. First time I've shared on this meeting. Thank you all for being here. And I'm relating it as well to my own personal experience, and if my family members had been involved, they have that emotional attachment to me. Excuse me. And although they certainly have my best interests at heart, and they've certainly been affected by adversely by me in my disease. they're not compulsive overeaters like I am. They may have their own addictions, but they don't have this particular facet of the disease. So they just don't understand me in my disease, and it would not have been effective, the approach by a recovered person. And my last bottom, which was early this year, was a real emotional bottom for me this time. Seeing so clearly how unmanageable my life had become. And I didn't think that it was. I thought I was managing pretty well, just having troubles keeping the food down. But this disease once again really brought me to my knees. And someone had shared earlier about the humility. It brought me to a place of humility where I was ready to hear what I needed to hear to set me on the path to recovery that I'm on now. So, I'm so grateful for that. I'm so grateful because this last bottom could have been much worse in terms of the physical aspects of the disease. I'm just really grateful for this program and that you're all here this morning. So thank you for letting me share my past.
Oh, thank you so much, Pam C. And if you're just joining us, let me fill you in on where we're at. We're on page 91 in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, reading the second full paragraph that begins with "When your man is better" and ends with "He may be more receptive when depressed." We're just reading and sharing on that one paragraph this morning. And like to get another lineup of people who would like to share. Please give your first name, last initial, and where you're calling from.
This is Elaine G. from New York.
Simma M. from New Jersey. Simma M. from New Jersey.
I've got Simma M. I've got Elaine G. Was there someone else trying to get in there too?
Stephen G. from Toronto.
I've got you, Stephen G. from Toronto.
Liz A. from California.
All right, Liz, gotcha. Do you have anyone else who'd like to share?
Jody E. from California.
All right, Jody. Awesome. See. All right, we'll go with that. I've got Elaine G, Simma M, Stephen G, Liz A, and Jody E. So, Elaine, you'll be up first, followed by Simma M.
This is Elaine G from New York. I'm relating this to myself. Before I came into the program, my family just nagged me to lose weight. And my father was very abusive about how I looked. Instead of asking me to go get help, you know, maybe they didn't know from this, but they were not helpful, you know. But like it says in this paragraph, you can't nag them, you know, and you got to, like, easy does it with them. Maybe just share your own experience of what what you've been through, you know. But my parents, you know, they're not alive now, so I'm not going to say any bad things about them. I don't think they knew any better, you know. Just nag at thinking that's going to help me, lose weight. And right now, I need to get a sponsor. I'll stay on the line and try to get a sponsor here now that helps me work the program. Anyway, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Elaine G. Next up, Simma M, followed by Stephen G.
Hi, this is Sima M., grateful compulsive overeater living in recovery in New Jersey. When I first heard this paragraph read this morning, I was like, well, I don't really relate to it at all. As a compulsive eater, nobody goes up to another person and says, you have a problem, let me help you with it. But then I thought about it more as people were speaking, and I related it to myself. And actually, when I first came into OA, I was about 24 years old, it wasn't my mother. I mean, she had seen me go down and then balloon up, go down, then balloon up, go down, then balloon up. And I was down, I was on a normal weight, I had lost weight, and I was at therapist, and I said to her, I just know what's going to happen. I know that I'm about to go back into the food and balloon up again. And she told me about OA. And that was like in the paragraph when you approach somebody and you tell them about OA. And you didn't have to wait for me to be any further into my disease than that. I ran to a meeting. I was so happy to find out that there was an organization because I had heard of AA, but I never dreamed that there was something for people like me. And that was 48 years ago. That began my journey. It's been up and down and all around, but I'm now celebrating 10 years of consistent recovery, so I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Sima, and congrats on 10 years, and sorry for saying your name incorrectly. Let's see, next up we've got Stephen G., followed by Liz A. Stephen G., can you hit star one to unmute, please?
Yes, good morning. I'm Stephen G., recovered compulsive overeater in Canada. This paragraph just repeats a common theme in this book, which is that what is said in the doctor's opinion, frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices, that appeals from outside of me could not help me. The pressure has to come from within me, not from outside. It's really only the pain of the disease that will give me the willingness to accept the diagnosis that I have a life-threatening illness and then to accept the solution. Because if I'm not in severe pain, if I'm not hopeless, then I'm going to try to negotiate with the disease. And the treatment of this disease is entire abstinence plus a spiritual experience as a result of working the steps. And if I don't fully grasp that I'm going to die from this disease, then I'll try to negotiate with that entire abstinence. I'll try to negotiate with which of these steps should I work and how hard should I work for them. And tradition 3 says that the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating. That's a very welcoming, inclusive tradition. But the truth is that's not the only requirement for recovery. What's required for recovery is a complete hopelessness. And I needed 3 years within the fellowship to negotiate with the disease and negotiate with the solution to get to that hopelessness. And once I got there, then I was willing to accept the treatment, which has saved my life. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Stephen G. Next up, we've got Liz A., followed by Jody E.
Good morning. This is Liz A. May I be heard?
We can hear you.
Great. Recovered compulsive overeater in Southern California. You know, the only thing that I did perfectly since the pandemic started was to not leave the rooms. I kept going to meetings, Zoom, Vision. I just kept going to meetings even when I was in the food. And I was going back to what the first reader shared about that fine line, fine window of time between the point where you're in the food and the when the miracle happens. And, you know, what I heard was, you know, stay until, don't leave until the miracle happens, because you can't have a head full of OA and stay in the food. You can for a while, but eventually you just can't, because you get to that hopelessness, and that hopelessness, then you've got the solution right there for you because you've never left. So if there's nothing else that I can say is just keep coming back, because of that window. And that's really all I have to share. So I'm going to pass. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Liz A. Next up is Jody E.
Thank you so much, moderator, for your service and everyone for your shares and for being here. So, the family. It's funny, in this paragraph, first it talks about talk to the person who cares the most about him, usually his wife. And then they say, well, maybe not. Maybe leave the family out and approach through his doctor or his priest instead. So, you know, it's not always, we're not always sure how to approach the alcoholic or the compulsive overeater. How do we do this? How do we approach them without offending them, without making them defensive? And it's a tricky situation. And my family, when I think about it, they have been concerned about me, but as an anorexic bulimic type, it was usually about my underweight that they were concerned, not my overweight. And it's understandable, you know, when someone's underweight or overweight, it's concerning. And my family, like any family member, didn't know what to say, didn't know what to do. And as has been said already, it can't come from the outside. We have to be ready. We have to be desperate. We have to reach some kind of bottom. And for me, it was really more of a spiritual bottom that I reached when I first came to OA than a physical bottom. I reached a lower physical bottom after I came to OA, and the binging progressed and got worse. So it takes what it takes for all of us, doesn't it? And our poor families, you know, we are the tornado roaring our way through the lives of others. And they have to come along for the ride, or they may not choose to come along for the ride. And we have to have compassion for them. I remember urging my husband to go to Al-Anon. Go to Al-Anon. But that was not his path. And even if he had, who knows, it might not have helped anything. So I get to recover for myself. I'm the only one I can change. And I get to take care of myself and mind my own business and pray for myself and the people that I love. And with that, I will pass. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Jody E. And I think we've got time for about three more shares. Who would like to share on this paragraph on page 91, second full paragraph?
Bonnie,
gotcha,
G.
Larry G.
Larry G, thank you.
Gotcha, Larry. And who was the second person?
Bonnie J. M.
Bonnie J. M. We can take one more, I think.
Sister Mary Jacinta G.
Oh, I'm sorry, one more time.
Sister Mary Jacinta G.
I'm sorry, I think I got Mary Jacinta G.
Yeah, Jacinta. Mm-hmm.
Jacinta, okay. All right, awesome. So I've got Larry G, Bonnie JM, Mary Jacinta G. And please let us know where you're calling from. And Larry, you're up first, followed by Bonnie.
Thank you, Larry G from California. And thank you, moderator, for your service. And happy 4th of July, Independence Day. We ought to have our own national holiday. I would call it Dependence Day, because that's when my ego has been smashed to bits. I finally, you know, threw in the towel and depend upon God. But we have learned so much since this chapter was written. The family afterwards, thank God for ACA, Adult Children of Alcoholics, and Al-Anon. I don't know where I'd be without those two programs. you know, it says in the promises or the vision for you, more will be revealed. And more was revealed about my family illness. And, you know, those programs have been a central fact of my recovery. You know, I did have times where I went and talked to the family afterwards and answer the questions, you know, as best I could, and gave my pitch, and all of that fell on deaf ears. And what I realized today that I didn't know then is that the family is sick as toxic rain. And I don't know if Bill or whoever wrote this chapter realized that then. It's a nice chapter. It's got some nice sentiments. But the family is as sick as toxic rain. And I have not only powerless over my own disease, this disease of compulsive eating, but I'm also powerless of the family, my family. Values. The family values have been handed down to me, like don't trust anybody and never give up and do it yourself and all those great family values I've gotten here. I just want to really welcome a new person to the call today. And this is a great fellowship. I just hope that you take advantage of everything. And finally, you know, get the kind of recovery you're yearning for. I have the kind of recovery I've been longing for years. And I had to be beaten in submission. I'm not the kind of guy that just, you know, learns a lesson and say, okay, I'm going to put that down and move on. I'm the kind of guy that has got to get the stuffing beat out of me. And it's been a long time, you know, 20 years I've spent in OA. And somebody I remember hearing from Florida, this woman said that she was dying in these rooms. I was dying in those rooms. Today I'm thriving. Today I'm alive. I woke up this morning. I couldn't wait to get up this morning and start my day with my wife who's on vacation. We're having a great time. Had a great Father's Day with my family. And the fog has lifted, right? I was developing a wet brain. The old timers say, hey, call it a wet brain, you know, like a pickled brain. It was taking me 72 hours to detox the fog. And today I'm waking up and my mind is clear as a spring day, and I turn it back to you. I pass it back to you, moderator.
Thank you so much, Larry G. Next up is Bonnie J.M., followed by Mary Jacinta.
Hi, this is Bonnie J.M. I'm from Arizona. Can I be heard?
We can hear you.
Okay, great. Yeah, I wanted to plug in on this because when I came into OA, which was in the early 80s, I was described as, I was actually a neurotic, maybe a psychotic, thin person. And I was teaching a weight class clinically in the same building where there was an OA meeting. And I had major judgments about OA from ignorance. And my thought was, oh, they just pray to God and the weight's going to fall off. How crazy is that? But then I had a client that wanted to go to OA, and I decided to go to a meeting to check it out. And I'm going to say, fortunately, I walked into a meeting. It was a big meeting. It was early in the morning, and I didn't understand it. But what I did see, I saw the recovery in the meeting. I saw the support in the meeting, and I saw tools that I thought were workable, even though I didn't understand them all. I didn't even have a clue what your version of spirituality and what that meant. But what I did do is, after that meeting, I've never left. And I went through three sponsors in the beginning, and one of them nailed me at one point, and she said, you're not going to get this because you're a challenger, and challengers, what they do is challenge. They never get it. And that's when I really stopped and listened and decided to do whatever I was told to do. Now, that being said, not too long ago, I have a friend that is very obese, and we were at a play, and she fell over trying to pick something up, and it took three guys to pick her up. And I took her to a meeting, and when she left the meeting, she says, I couldn't relate to any of this. So, you know, it takes what it takes. And when people are ready, they're ready. And I mean, this is my way of life now. I absolutely love it. I could never do therapy again the way I did prior to coming in to OA, and I am every day. The miracles do happen. So thank you for listening to me, and happy 4th, everyone.
Thank you so much, Bonnie J.M. And next we have Mary Jacinta G.
Hi, I'm Sister Mary Jacinta G. in Lincoln, Nebraska. And I definitely relate to that needing that miraculous window of time in which I'm willing to get help. The desperation and the misery needing to be on the surface enough, and yet, just in a way, just the gift of my misery in leading me to sobriety. Otherwise, I will try to take things back, and as in any way that things seem even the slightest bit manageable, I'll try. And so, once again, just the gift of getting to that point where I realize I cannot manage this. So with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Well, thank you so much, Sister Mary Jacinta G from Nebraska. And we can do like a one minute share. Is there anyone who'd like to share for a minute?
This is Marion H from Florida.
All right, Marion, go for it.
Thank you so much. I am just claiming my seat. I also came into in the 80s and in and out, never left the rooms, but in and out of recovery, had lots of sponsors, and it's been only since July 1st that I'm totally, totally, totally abstinent, working with a sponsor, reading, writing, praying, and I'm very, very grateful. Unfortunately, it's been an extremely long road for me, but this is the last house on the block, and I am grateful that I have my God and my sponsor and all the numbers, and I love everybody and have a beautiful July 4th, a blessed abstinent day. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Mary Ann H. from Florida. So we will now close the meeting with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Dana P., will you please read A Vision for You?
Yes, it's my pleasure, Stephanie. Good morning, everyone. I'm Dana P. in California. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answer will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God, and admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past, be free of what you find, and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you stretch the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.